This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
How we doing tonight, Bingetown? This is your boy PD, a.k.a. Producer Dave. Here with me, I have Kyle, our Rook, and our vets, Paul and Luke. However, we are joined by our OG homie, Alkiviadis. Yes, ladies, he is single. We are discussing today only episode 5 of Alice in Borderland, just because we felt that there was a lot to break down this episode. We get introduced to quite a few new characters and some new plot points, so we wanted to take our time and talk through it. Now that the intro is out of the way, Luke, take over from here.
So first thing I want to say is this episode was lit. It was the best one of the season by far. And so when we were going through and taking our notes, we kind of collectively just agreed that there are so many different info dumps here that are so important to the end game of where Alice in Borderland is heading, that it was just worth it to split this out as its own episode. And Dave already mentioned so many new characters here. And speaking of which, we're going to have a quick hitting segment here specifically for Kyle, where we want to get his initial take of all these new characters that we got introduced to before the rest of us vets taint our opinion of these characters for him, just how we talk about them and stuff. So with that being said, Kyle, I'm gonna list the names of the people or descriptions if we don't have a name yet, and you just kind of talk about what you're feeling, if you like them, don't like them, think okay, they have potential or not.
Should I rate them out of 5 or 10?
Do 5.
Sounds good.
Yeah, do the 0-1-2 scale.
If I would have sex with them, basically.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, every
5. 1 to 5 is fine. 1 to 5 is fine. Go.
Okay, I'm in.
So, all right, we're going to do this by factions. First, we'll start off with one of the newer factions we got introduced this episode. It's the Militant. So we saw him in episode 2, the tag game, but I want your take on him and how your perception of him changed a little bit with more info and dialogue here for Agony, the leader of the Militants.
Okay, so I'm going to give him a solid 4 out of 5.
I like it. Yeah. I like it.
I agree
with
that. He
was definitely a beast in episode 2. Also, he like literally killed a tiger with his fist.
Right?
So that's like easily 4 out of 5 worthy, if not 5 out of 5 worthy. But I really like how he has this huge role. I feel like we didn't really expect that from episode 2. It's like, okay, we even gassed the shit out of him in episode 2. Like, oh, this dude can fight. He's cool. Even though he did sacrifice his boy. But I like him a lot. I like the scar. I like the military fatigues. You know, I like how he just like whipped the piss. I like how he shot the first shot and then put his second hand out. I was like, okay, like this is gonna take a couple shots.
That fucking punch was savage.
It was so ridiculous. But I will give him a 4 out of 5.
All right, so cool. Now our next character we have is his number 1 or number 2. We don't know yet. Niragi, and this is the guy who always is rocking the assault rifle. He's always wearing black and white, crazy anime kind of looking character. What do you think about him so far?
He's interesting. We get the most of him compared to the rest of the militants, but I would say that I'll give him a 3 out of 5. I do like his look and I do kind of like his demeanor, but he kind of does seem like we talked a little bit before we recorded that he's kind of like that someone who we're meant to hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he kind of has that cocky, confident vibe that like, I'm just kind of like, no, I'm going to be like, fuck this guy. So I'll give him a solid 3 out of 5.
Yeah, you know he's going to be stirring the pot.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely a pot stirrer.
Dude, spoiler, that fucking guy sucks.
I hate him.
Sorry. No, but in a good way. I think he portrays anime characters so well for a live adaption.
I was going to say, whenever we say we hate a character, it's not like their actor. It's just like, you know, I think it's more so like we hate the character because their actor is so good.
We'll straight up say if we hate your actor.
Yeah, we won't be afraid to tell you how it is.
And I want you to say that if you think anyone is just portrayed terribly.
It's also very difficult because they're speaking in Japanese, so I can't really tell if they're a good or bad actor.
Right, but, like if they're...
Yeah.
All right, so next up, we don't have the name of this character yet, but I know, Alki, if you're on the next podcast episode, you're going to love talking about him. I love talking about him, too. The bald guy with the samurai katana,
yes,
right?
Yes. This is a 5 out of 5.
Wow. Okay.
I think we're biologically wired to be interested in bald, tattooed people who wield katanas, rather.
Yep.
So he kind of, no fear, just like walked up to a tiger, I believe, and just kind of that one I'm sorry, one sword kind of draw killed it. And I was just like, okay, obviously this guy's going to be an amazing character.
Reminds me of the character from Bleach. What's his name? Begins with an I.
Ikkaku.
Ikkaku, right. Yeah.
The tattoos look sick. Obviously, there's like so much more to him than what meets the eye. Oh my God. It's going to be very interesting to find that out.
I love how his katana has such a long handle. You guys notice that? Yeah, it's like huge.
He's cool. Thumbnail too. You know how Netflix shows thumbnails?
Yes.
There's usually two or three of them. He's one of them. And it's just him just sitting there with the sword looking like a badass.
They're like, let's get the most interesting looking guy. Yeah. Just throw him on a poster.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, as human beings, we're like hardwired to be interested in people like that.
He reminds me of Samurai Champloo, obviously he's meant to be more villainous, this bald guy. The second main character in Samurai Champloo has like a really...
The more serious guy?
No, the not serious guy. Oh, like
the breakdance guy?
The breakdance guy. He's unorthodox fighting style. Like, I get that vibe from him.
Yeah, personality is complete opposite. Yeah, but yeah, the fighting style, I can see that.
Yeah.
God, I can't wait to Kyle to see more on him. All right, our next character, that finishes out the militants that we get introduced. Let's quickly talk about... We don't have the name of White Hair yet, so I'm still going to be referring to him as White Hair this episode.
Silver.
But his... friend Kuina, who is in Arisu's game later on. So what do you think about Kuina?
This is another 5 out of 5.
All right.
I like Kuina a lot. I like her look. I also, it was interesting to me, I couldn't tell. I feel like she's hiding something. Obviously she is hiding something, but I do feel like she portrays herself in a way that makes her come off as like kind of dumber than she is or weaker than she is. So I'm interested to find out more about her, but I will say that I think she's very hot, and I like how her and White Hair seem to be... He is an executive. She is not. But they obviously seem to have some type of their own thing going on. Mm-hmm. So I think they're...
Oh my God. I can't. I just want more.
I just think that she seems like her and White Hair are going to be good allies, or at least good people for Arisu and Usagi to kind of work together with.
Okay. Now we're going to run through the 4 other notable characters we get introduced here. And this is the Hatter faction, right? The non-militant executives. So starting from the least important, or least screen time, I should say, we have the nerd executive. I don't think they give his name yet, but he clearly is just brains. So what do you think about this guy?
I like him a lot. I just am kind of drawn to that like character archetype. However it is pronounced. He just kind of, I literally wrote in my notes that I just fucking rock with this guy. I like that he kind of has that like cool-headed right-hand man vibe, mm-hmm. while we have the eccentric kind of leader. I think he seems like he gives a good balance to the Hatter, and he's going to play a very important role going forward, it feels like.
Okay. And now the next executive that didn't get a lot of screen time this episode is, we were talking about this pre-podcast, don't know what to call her, the crazy ab smile girl.
Yeah, abs, black dress and abs.
Yeah. You know who I'm referring to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give her a 3 out of 5 only because she's attractive, but she just seems kind of crazy and she's probably going to create problems down the line. It was just kind of just even suggesting that I get the mindset of like, you know, most people don't matter in their trek towards collecting a full deck for the Hatter. Just like, yeah, we'll just throw people into a hearts game and kill them all just so one person can win. It's kind of like, all right, fuck this bitch.
Psycho.
Just smiling.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then our next stop is Anne, who is the executive that is in Arisu's game. She gets the most screen time of the non-Hatter.
I'll give her a 4 out of 5. I'm generous. No one got lower than a 3 out of 5.
Yeah.
That's good, though. No, that's
they are. I told you.
This is why we're trying to get these people to watch Alice in Borderland, because all the characters are amazing. From even the 3-star ones that you just gave, like, I like them all. Mm-hmm. So
they're very intriguing. Everybody has, you don't really know a lot, too. Yeah. They do a good job of not really revealing everything right away. It keeps you like wanting to keep being involved in the show. That's why it's so good.
Yeah. I would say, and I mean, just the role that she played in this episode is one that was incredibly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
How she kind of, the first person we've ever seen basically know what was going on in the game from the get-go. And it was interesting that she was kind of just like testing Arisu.
Are you sure you're okay with that, Arisu?
Yeah, right. And also, I just loved the 2 smirks that she gives, where he like says something and figures it out, and then she kind of like gives a half smirk. I was like, this bitch.
That was really cool.
I loved Anne a lot more in this watch than the first time. I don't really remember caring about her too much, but just paying attention specifically to her, I thought she was incredible. She was good. Yeah.
Yeah. This episode, was that all of them? I'm sorry.
No, one more. Okay. So obviously, we got to talk about Hatter.
True, the goat.
That's a five out of ten. Yeah,
he's a beast. He literally came in the room and it was like, all right, I fuck with this guy from the get go.
That's literally in my notes. I like this guy just portrays everything I want to be in, like a character in an anime.
Also, yeah, if you grow your hair out and you keep going with that facial hair style, you're like, yeah, you can
take that as a compliment. I'll take it. I'll do that then. Wait, Hatter cosplay coming this Halloween to a Philadelphia bar near you?
Maybe 2 years from now.
Okay. Yeah, I need some time.
The sound crew basically just made this whole episode around him. They did such a good job of killing the sound in the background whenever he had important shit to say, but then also giving him that goofy fun vibe and just like the fun disco music when he's leading. It's just, I loved it all. I thought Hatter's just introduction got me so hype, and I'm happy that you like him.
Yeah, without a doubt. Also, his fucking outfit is amazing. Yeah.
I love the character design for the Hatter.
Yeah, he's
so
everything. I can't say a negative thing about him. I mean, even as we get even a little backstory about him, which was intriguing. He seemed like he might have been like a little bit of a dick. Obviously, he's somewhat selfish because he's like, I'm the number one. I'm going to be the hero. But
I don't want to touch on that.
I just want more of him. I feel like I want more of him more than any other character in the show.
Definitely has a good anime design, I feel like.
Always remember that this is a take on Alice in Wonderland. So the fact that he is the Mad Hatter character in this world, that has to play a part into it, too, because even when the actual Mad Hatter and the actual Alice in Wonderland story is doing things, sometimes he says things that make him seem a little evil, and sometimes he says things that makes him, you know, he's all over the place. And that's, I think he just does that really well here.
I think it should have been a prerequisite to watch Alice in Wonderland before this, because I haven't seen that since I was like 7, and I totally don't remember anything, and I'm sure there's so much more.
Me and Luke look at each other, because like the only reason we have like, I guess, a deep knowledge, not even deep, it's like a shallow knowledge of Alice in Wonderland, is because of Kingdom Hearts. Baby, greatest game of all time. Me and Luke just looked at each other. We just eye fucked so hard.
I've seen
right
the Depp one. I've never seen that.
I saw that. That's a good one too, and that's the one I think of when I'm comparing all these characters.
I want to say something about the Hatter. I think he's obviously really cool. He's a dope character. He's a great introduction. Like, he has so much knowledge that even like Arisu hasn't concluded yet, inferred on his own yet. But I found him like, I was annoyed. Like, he's taking advantage of all these people, and one by one they're gonna get free or whatever, as what we know right now. And I was just like, damn, we got to take this. To be honest, when I first watched it and when I'm watching it now as my rewatch, I'm like, this guy's, we got to take him down somehow. Like, I want Arisu to.
Oh, he's definitely not pure
out,
good.
Yeah, like, yeah, to figure out a way to take him down. I think he's fun to watch.
Chaotic neutral.
I was just going to say, on the chart, where do you think he is? Chaotic neutral?
I would say.
No, chaotic good, if anything, I think. I think his intentions are there. Like, he wants to end the games. But
I would say I would agree with that, especially because I feel like in his heart, yeah, obviously he wants to be the one that survives, and he has that line, like I mentioned, whatever, 2 minutes ago, that he wants to be the hero. But at the same time, like, he is giving those people like a much better
hope
experience and hope. Like, look at what Arisu, Ichigo, and fucking Shota and Shibuki's life was like. Like, that's what a lot of people who are in the game are living like that.
His name is Karube, man. Come
dude,
on.
It's fucking Ichigo.
Shibuki's hot.
Yeah, yeah, she definitely is. But
like, she's a bitch.
A lot of people are out there living in the dirt, like, doing nothing. So, I mean, at least for them, like,
that's exactly how I take it.
In their days between games, like,
yeah, I mean,
fucking partying.
Yeah, did you see him give that speech? He gives that speech every night before games start. I would fucking fight for this man. Like, hell yeah.
I would murder so many people after hearing that speech. Oh my God. Fuck everyone.
He's got a good ability of, like, you know, leading. Obviously, his means are maybe not what I agree with, but his goals are not bad.
This dude's got Conqueror's Hockey, if there were in this universe. Sure. He's one in a million.
So we can start getting into it before because we're going to be talking a lot more about these characters. So I'm ready to get into it. We open with Arisu and Usagi. Basically, Usagi is just teaching Arisu how to survive in the real world without, you know, food, like, just hunting animals, camping out outside, all this stuff. And we get a little awkward moment of him sharing a tent with Usagi, which I thought was really cute and, you know, kind of funny too, because he's sitting outside and he's just getting eaten by mosquitoes.
Dude, the sweat. We were talking about the sweat. He had the sweat on the neck when he was like in the tent, just looking like wide eyed open. And first of all, he did not look like he was going to get any sleep. He was supposed to go in there to get sleepy, and his eyes were not even close being shut.
Yeah,
his pants are tight too.
That is for sure.
Pitched a tent. He pitched a tent inside of a tent.
That, I mean, I would have been doing the same goddamn thing. But I was just funny too, because the scene opens up and the first thing I noticed was there's only one tent. I was like, look at these two. There's one tent, and then he just like lays outside. I'm like, bro, what's going on?
To backtrack a little bit, when they were show to us that they were their main goal was to find the beach. They went up to some guys, the Ferris wheel, whatever. And then they were just kind of looking over the city like, where the hell is this beach? You guys see that bridge? That was a nice bridge. It's the same bridge from before.
Same bridge.
Probably look it up.
It was a good one.
Alrighty. Next, after a nice little nap, it's still nighttime. Games are starting up. So Adisu and Usagi decide to scout out some of these games. Adisu approaches a couple random players, just asking them questions about the beach. They don't know anything about it. So as they're staking out one of the games, as it ends, Adisu notices that some of the guys are wearing a wristband, which is similar to the exact same one that Agune had in episode 2. With that information, they kind of give chase to these people, but this is the kind of the first time we see cars being utilized. So I thought that was a pretty interesting aspect of this, because how do they work? I guess they're just older.
They're just
cars.
Old.
Yeah, that's
they don't have they don't have any
electrical circuits.
Electrical circuits and exactly. There are some dope whips.
Yeah. So somehow using their legs, they're able to keep up with these cars and eventually end up at the beach. Where they kind of are laying in the bushes, kind of scouting out, when all of a sudden they are both taken. And this is where we get some fun, I think.
Only thing I want to say about that beginning montage is I think it's awesome that they just work together so well, and that they show you that Arisu is getting his survival skills down. Mm. He's just a natural learner.
Yeah, he did pick up on that.
I was going to say, I love how Arisu completely went from being somebody who did nothing, all he did was sit on his ass and play video games, to he's literally saying to Usagi, I don't want to waste any second. Like, I want to learn as much as I possibly can. Like, I'll go hunt these boars with you. I need to learn all these survival skills for my friends.
Growth. Eventually having sex with Usagi.
Oh yeah, he's gonna pile. Dude. Oh my god.
Is that a spoiler?
I'm just playing. Not, but like, they do a good job of shipping them, like with the tent and stuff. But that was good. Oh, I wanted to say, not only is she teaching him, I think with him, she's excelling too, because he's got a lot of brains. He's got good wit. Like, she, when he was like, keep an eye out for those people with the wristbands, you know, like, mm-hmm. she's surviving because of him too. It's not just her.
If there's anything we've seen from Adisu these past few episodes, is that he can bring out the best, I think, in a lot of people.
Yeah, classic main
protagonist. Yeah, exactly. Just the protagonist characteristic.
This scene we're going to pretty much break down.
Yeah, this is going to be really tough. This is going to be a very intricate scene. So Adisu and Usagi wake up with a bunch of people surrounding them. Adisu is asking questions about the beach and the games. We get the Mad Hatter introduction. He comes in and we just know immediately, like Kyle said, he just arrives and he just has this presence, this aura around him that just, you know, he's the leader of the beach. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was definitely one scene where I was like really picturing it in my head, what it would look like black and white drawn. This scene where he comes up from behind them and is like decked out in like the colorful outfit and everything. It was just a great entrance for someone.
We have all the answers that you're looking for. Arisu was like, I heard I'd find the answer if I came to the beach. And of course, perfect timing. He was on the other side of that door waiting for Arisu to say that. Kicked it in. We have all the answers.
And just to let you know, Kyle, don't obviously look at the Wikipedia page because you could get some spoilers, but the character designs of the actual characters in the show are so well done compared to their manga counterparts. Like, it's insane. So the Hatter looks right on point to his manga.
And just to recap, in this room, the executives we have are Anne, the crazy ab smile bitch, nerd executive, and then Hatter, right? I don't think any other...
No one else matters.
Nerd executive was the coolest, man. He was like a... He's like, oh, dude, sorry to rough you up. Like, we just saw like people sneaking around.
He's that classic anime pushing glasses guy like this. Mm-hmm.
I like the cards on the wall. It's pretty dope.
Yeah, and I was like a great reveal where it's you know before they say it what it is, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh fuck. Yeah. Like,
did you look right at the hearts at the seven?
No, not the seven.
Oh,
the first thing I noticed was that they didn't have the four clubs or diamonds.
The first thing I did in my first watch through, I was like, seven hearts, that seems like a hard one, and he's got it. And then I looked, I was like, holy shit, it's the only one not crossed off.
And then none of the face cards are crossed off, too.
Yeah.
I just want to say that this scene and then another scene later just does such a good job of playing the part of asking questions from the audience's perspective. Pretty much, they almost hit every single random question you would want to know about this world and their methods about getting these game cards. It's just incredible. And that's why I was so looking forward to this episode, because the first four episodes really felt like a prequel setup to this. And now we're getting into the real plot and then we're laying the foundation for what this world's rules are and just the end game. And this scene, Dave, you can keep taking us through, starts with that opening of the card walls. That information drop is just amazing to see that they're only missing face cards and then three other cards, right?
It's like the
right.
two of clubs and something else.
Yeah, it's a clubs, ten of hearts,
four diamonds. And
four of diamonds, correct.
Yeah. I thought it was odd that aces were positioned ones. Less than two. Yeah, like ones.
I mean,
not that it really matters that
it
much.
It doesn't matter, just... but I think their intended purpose, I'm pretty sure ace is one, usually.
Mm-hmm. So. How relieving would that be? You go into a game all of a sudden... ace of spades. Oh my god.
Cake
10 push-ups.
Yeah, but then you have to go that next day. You have to go in a game again.
No, it's just whenever your visa is gonna expire.
Well, would you,
you're saying because day. It's the one day. Yeah, that was
shit. Yeah,
and I would think like the first person who got an ace, the game, I guess if you knew that the level was, you know, the difficulty, like you would see the ace and be like, oh fuck, like this is the hardest game possible.
That would be me.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was going to be.
Oh, if I was the first day and I saw an ace, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm gonna die.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean it matters a lot that aces are ones. I was just shocked by it.
I like this scene a lot because I think up till now Arisu's obviously been the smartest character, even in the games that he's been a part of, the first game and at the tag game. Like, he saved everyone, even though white-haired guy had like an idea of what to do. Mm-hmm. He was right there. Now we met a lot of characters that are presumably smarter than
these
him,
are the big dogs,
and we get like a good power level reveal, like, which that. Is the classic anime trope right there, and I thought that was really cool and something on the rewatch I appreciated it even more.
Fuck yeah.
Kind of go along with that, Arisu, even with all these smart people around him, he's like, well, what if I just like refuse your offer? And he was like, you can't reject me, bitch. I'm the head. Plus, your visa is expiring today. So, like, you're screwed. Anyway. Yeah.
And he had the tally is like the circles with the. I thought that was so weird. Like, who the heck is going to circle it out?
He wants to be sure. You got to be. Yeah. You got to be sure your visa is going to be ending that
because
day.
If you don't join a game after a while, your phone dies and you can't tell how much is left on your visa. We found that out in episode two. Mm-hmm. So if you don't. If it's been a while since you played in a game, you have no idea how many days you could just lose it and die.
I also like how Hatter kept calling it a country, and Arisu was like, what do you mean country? You keep saying that. And he's like, well, I mean, come on, like, we got visas, you know,
right.
You gotta have a visa to go into a country.
Yeah, it makes sense.
We haven't even explained the reason on the board. So Hatter states that there's only one way to end this hellish nightmare. We clear all the games, collect all the playing cards. And Usagi asks if that will return them to the original world. And this is where it comes in, Paul, what he was just saying, is that he was saying the original world will not return. Only one person can return to the real world. And then he starts throwing this term around of a country. And like you said, Paul, visas. So it kind of makes sense. But I feel like, does it confirm that this is definitely not the real world? Like,
well, I mean, it doesn't confirm it, but I think that's the most knowledge we get on it. And these people have been here for a while. So I wanted to take that to Kyle, where... it sounds like, at least from this point of episode five, that our idea is it's a parallel dystopian world. And you're in this foreign accidental country is what he calls it. And you can return home if you get all the cards. So,
and I just want to say real quick, Hatter did say that he had quote unquote credible sources to.
Yeah.
So that was the thing that made me like kind of think like, okay, maybe like he does actually know, but.
I mean, I like the character, but I feel like I'm taking credible sources with a grain of salt when he says it.
Yeah.
I also think that it's probably just hard to think, like, imagine it, but I don't think there's like an island next to Japan that is this Japan that they're in. Once they just like, you know, cross in a boat to go back to Japan. I feel like it's still the fact that like they're in like a different dimension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's clear because with the cigarette, you guys talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still on that they're not in the same pretty much dimension that they were in. I also thought it was interesting. Going along when he said the credible sources, he says after that, like, before you entered this world, we already thoroughly investigated everything about this country. And that's so just going back on, like, we have no idea really how time works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously people have been here way longer than Arisu has. And it's interesting of like, how long have these people been here? Like, why is it so segmented like that? Like, how did not everyone get transferred at the same exact time?
Yeah. Right. Like, obviously the Hatter's been there forever. It seems And also the nerd number two guy, he's like, oh, there's never been a game outside of Tokyo. So they've explored outside of Tokyo, I guess.
That's in the executive conversation later, but that's a great point.
Just to go back to world building, in the beginning when they were hunting for the boars, Usagi has a line saying, yeah, because all the people are gone, the animals started coming back in. So that was
right. That's just so weird. It's so confusing to figure out, like, what is this world?
This could be happening for years.
No idea.
Yeah.
I like the answer that we were given here, to be honest. Like, as far as dystopian stories go, just it being a parallel universe seems really cool to me. And it makes sense with everything they're saying. Like, nothing has contradicted that yet.
Yeah. And I also, this is funny because I'm glad we did the character stuff at the beginning, because now we can talk about, like, my first impressions. And I literally wrote down that I like the girl with the bangs, who is the abs bitch. And I ended up giving her tied for my lowest grade after the episode.
I will tell you that anytime she's on the screen, she just commands attention. And that's always a positive to me.
She was definitely commanding my attention.
Yeah.
They
did it with the clothes too. Sorry, Paul.
Would be terrifying in the bedroom. I feel like she would tie you up, bring knives in there.
Oh man, sign me up.
Fire, candle wax, everything. So let's talk about
let's
talk about the rules here.
I was gonna say. So after all that conversation, we finally get Hatter's objective of the beach and the rules of the beach. Rule each. Always wear a bathing suit. That way you can't conceal any weapons. He proceeds to also tell them that every door has been super glued to prevent, like, any privacy. There's going to be no hiding of anything here. Rule ni, all playing cards belong to the beach. Pretty obvious one. And then we get Ruru's son. Urigari no mono no shio.
Nani?
Death to traitors.
Fuck yeah.
Chills down the spine right here. I think Hatter is just so good at giving speeches, and just, I have so many of his quotes, like, just written down, just because I just got tied to so many of them. The one I have here is, everyone at the beach vowed to produce the first departure from this country at the cost of our lives. It's our mission, our duty. Chills, man.
Dude, like, he is such a good speaker.
Giving it out.
Yeah, the way he changes his tone and everything is just kind of, he really knows the right words, the right phrases to kind of stress in the right way.
Mm-hmm. I got
also,
chills.
going back to rule each, is rule two or rule one? Is that I like how he adds the part that the more cards you collect, it means you can kind of rise in the ranks.
Oh, right, right.
Which that makes like important. A ton of sense. You know, that makes a ton of sense. But also, I like the idea that they collect duplicates no matter what, because they want to collect as many full decks as they possibly can. That was a question that I kind of had in the beginning when they revealed the wall and everything. And obviously, you know, Arisu and Usagi have like 6 or 7 cards between the two of them. And some of the cards were already crossed off. So I was curious, like, what would happen with those duplicate cards.
But that's nice. What I'm saying, yeah, bro. Yeah, they hit all these random questions that a lot of shows just kind of skip over. You fill in the blanks, but they explicitly hit a bunch of things that audience members want to know.
Yeah. And it was also, it's just going to be interesting if we end up getting it, of like how the executive got to where they're supposed, you know, where they are. They obviously deserve to be there because it seems like it's a straight meritocracy. None of them really know each other. So it's basically, you complete games, you get the higher ranks, which is basically, you know, a game within a game that's built for Arisu. You know, that's basically his
drink,
his John,
fuck, so. Take drugs.
And that was like shocked. That the beach was like this, and it's the best case scenario.
Oh,
literally, okay. Like, couldn't be better.
Hold on, we're jumping ahead because there's two more things that happened in the scene. We said the death to traitors thing, then we have what Paul said. I thought it was pretty badass how Arisu does the rejection line, and then it, like, epic zoom in on just like it does it like a classic anime thing when he says that, and it gives you like a epic zoom onto all of the executives. It goes around, like, you know, it would be the panel, it'd be like ching ching ching.
I'm literally imagining that, the sound,
dude. Straight up out of a manga. It was so good.
That was good.
Was there anything else for that
scene? Then the last thing is just the fact that the Hatter does his crazy little laugh when he realizes that Arisu brought him the Seven of Hearts, one of the four things that they didn't have. And so right there, that puts him on executive radar. Obviously, they wouldn't just promote him on the spot, but that's enough. They got a really difficult heart card that the country needed, or that the beach needed. That's just
one of the last two hearts they need. It's the 7 and the 10, right?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I want to know what that 9 of Hearts game was like.
Dude,
it was definitely the bangs, the ab crazy chick who in the black who did that.
I wonder in the manga that if the manga,
she's probably the heart clearer.
I wonder in the manga, like, if they show you other games that, like, Arisu's not involved in, kind of like in other animes, to show you other fights and stuff. That would be pretty cool. Whatever.
They do that this episode.
We get a montage.
Yeah, this episode. A little bit. I just meant, you're right.
Yeah. So after Hatter threatens Arisu and Usagi, they kind of figure out, like, okay, we're kind of trapped here. We don't really have any options. Our visas are expiring, so we'll just chill. And they tour the facility, and boy, you can really dance.
Like, basically, what I was saying too, of like the best case scenario. Like, why the fuck not act like that in a game.
You're gonna die, yeah, so why not like, die it, like
overdosing? Filling, yeah, filling that space between games, like that would be the best thing you could possibly do. Like, what would be the point?
Are
of
you
just, like,
kidding me? Sign me up. Like, I would live in this world for this scenario. This is awesome. Yeah.
It would literally be amazing. And also, it was funny when we get Usagi in her swim trunks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was gonna get to, oh. What did this say? She looks bad as shit. Okay,
I mean, you can say it if you want. Yeah, you said. It was just funny how I was just laughing how she kind of obviously she's into it and she puts on like the sweater jacket and then they're walking over next to each other and those two chicks are like, I don't know, maybe 25 feet away, just, you know, staring at them. And she goes, I feel like we're being watched. I was like, no shit, you're being watched. You're literally making eye contact with the people watching you. I thought that was really funny.
And then they're kind of touring the facility. They get to the main hall, I guess you want to call it, where Hatter is just, again, just delivering a chilling speech about...
Oh, you missed the nightclub. It's part two.
Yeah, nightclub. We got some...
That's where I would live in this fucking beach.
Where do they get all those damn bathing suits, though? Like, where do they find them?
Dude, everything's free.
Yeah, everything's free.
You go to the store, yeah.
Just go to the mall, take it. But like I said, Hatter is just so good at delivering it. He's basically giving a pump-up speech to everybody in the beach, getting them ready... for game time. Like, everyone's going to be everyone's segmented into different cars. They're all going to be going to whatever game facilities appear. And we kind of get this montage right here of, we get a different glimpse of all the different games that everybody's attending. We get to see some of the action of the militants. We don't know at this point that they're the militants, but great montage. Honestly, I think, like, of the games, I feel like the one where you're getting held, you know, you didn't watch the escalator one.
I literally wrote human elevator .. all caps. Fuck that.
You think?
Oh, because of heights.
Win that? Dude, that would I be think terrible. I could win that. I don't know.
You could win that. No fucking way. I wouldn't have won any of them.
Just don't look down and just grip iron grip for days.
You think you got an iron grip?
Oh
yeah, bro. He's been jerking off for years.
That grips more
than
iron.
He hasn't let go of his dick since five.
We got a diamond grip up in this bitch. That's just not letting go.
I wonder if there was rules. Like, I'm sure there was. You can't put your legs up there.
Yeah,
that's what I was literally
otherwise
thinking.
Lasered. Like, I'm sure there was something like that.
I was literally thinking, just why not just all fours it just on that elevator?
You guys have obviously probably talked about this, but the laser like coming down from the sky, it's freaking crazy.
It'd be
sick.
Yeah. Honestly, also, I feel like if you like thought you were gonna fall and like, all right, I'm gonna fall, just like hook your leg up, break the rule, get lasered instead of falling down. Yeah. Like,
much
why
easier,
not?
Right? Mm-hmm.
I do want to say the one thing we missed before the gaming montage starts was White Hair and Kuina looking at each other and saying, like, they might be useful to our plan, that is.
And it's their plan. He emphasizes the fact that it's those two, their plan, not the whole beach's plan. Yeah.
Right, because he would have said the plan. Maybe, mm-hmm.
We get a nice Arisu quote when he looks at Usagi, I guess, when they're going to, they've been assigned different groups, different games, and he says, you must survive. Why do you think that is?
Well, I know why.
Hey! He might not know consciously, but subconsciously.
What do we call them? Usagani? Or no. Sorry. I just mixed the two wrong characters.
How do we fuck that
Usarisu?
Up?
Usarisu? Wait, what did we call
them?
Arisagi.
Arisagi, probably.
Arisagi. I think that's what it was. It might have been Arisagi.
See, I'm so smart.
Yeah, because it wasn't Usagisu. It was definitely Arigai.
No, now you're just throwing syllables together.
I'm just throwing them all together. Let's do it.
Arisagi.
You guy.
Alrighty. We already talked about how dope it was watching Agane just fuck up this tiger and the sword dude fucking up a tiger. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can already tell who the main focus militants are at this point in time.
Right.
I was like not expecting Agane to like come back. Not like this soon, and I guess in this way. And then, because you see, I mean, they kind of roll in different clips from all three of these games together, but he literally shows up and just punches that tiger. And I was like, literally, what the fuck is going on with this guy? Like, if he could have done that, he totally could have beat the guy in the tag game way easier. Fuck
it. I also want to make the point that Arisu and Usagi did get put into separate games. They're not going to be together for this.
We see Usagi in her game, Bingo in Match Factory, which they didn't explain it.
Give me human elevator.
Honestly,
they said you have 9 matches and you need to answer all of the numbers in the rooms.
You need to get bingo.
Yeah, and then they showed you a quick video, or I'm sorry, a quick snapshot of like the bingo card and everybody else in the game. There was like 10 other people, and they were all dead except for her and one other person. And I was like, what the hell is going on in that maze?
Wow. I forgot about the dead people. Yeah.
Human elevator sounding pretty nice, huh, guys? That diamond grip.
I don't know, dude. The carousel with the wild animals. That was
also crazy. Spade. I feel like that would be fun. If you were militant too with a gun, just like exactly what what's his name was doing. The crazy dude. What was it?
Niragi.
Yeah. Niragi, yeah.
Oh, if you're militant that would, with a gun?
Yeah, he's just sitting on there, he's just shooting crows, shooting some tigers.
It's like worth one point. I was like, what a loser.
What a loser. He's not got a good shot.
I mentioned the power levels earlier. Like, we get some people who are obviously really smart, really good at the games. We also see in this montage people who are strong, like Aguni, obviously knocking out the tiger. Bald samurai just slices in one shot a tiger jumping at him. Like, that's pretty crazy, because earlier we saw the jack, was it last episode four,
the panther
and he's stabbing it repeatedly and it still eats
they're
him.
Tanks the you animals know, so, are tanks
yeah they're tanks and this guy slices and kills a tiger one shot, boom, dead. So the year no that's why I love that guy so much.
Yeah, and that's a good point with the panther too, that was not an easy animal to kill.
Fucking Narigi is on the pirate ship. He's shooting a crow. That's one point. He's doing nothing for this squad.
That's what I'm
he's just
saying.
Enjoying
that's
it. Right. He's just, you can obviously see he's doing this in a sadistic way. Just
like
firing
he's just so confident it. That they're going to win the game. Yeah, doesn't care.
Doesn't even care. Exactly. Yeah.
And I also like how they kind of sell the contrast between people who are not allied with the beast or the beast with the beach, the beast. And who are, you know, all the people that were kind of in the merry-go-round is what that thing is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, the merry-go-round. And they're obviously just like scared out of their boots. Chota was like in the first game, what most people would be like, you know, in that game. Absolutely. So it was funny to just see kind of the contrast between how well oiled of a machine the beach is compared to everybody that's kind of just on their own.
So after the gaming montage of all the non Arisu games, now this next section is going to cover what his what did he pull? He pulled the Four of Diamonds game.
And it was a card that they needed still.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Four of Diamonds. Light bulb.
Called Light Bulb. Yeah. So we get a nice roster of people starting this game. Definitely the most interesting group, I would say, where we have Anne, who is specifically there to watch and test Arisu to see if he's executive material. We have the guy from the tag game who is basically just a little bitch and Arisu saved his life.
I just want to emphasize how little of a bitch that dude is.
Yeah, he sucks.
Hate him, and Arisu should have let him die in the first game.
I think I think at this point in time, I don't like him. Well,
okay. Well, when we get to his lines, I will explain how much of a moron this guy is.
Just pull the first one. Just
so dumb.
He was kind of whatever.
And then, of course, the last person we get is Kuina. I think she introduces herself in this scene.
Yeah. We definitely get her name here because when she and says Arisu, like, you know, I'm testing you to be an executive. And for everybody who is, you know, caught up to at least the end of the Dressrosa arc of One Piece, is that the Don Quixote family has the executives. All of them are the suits. And I was literally writing down, like, this reminds me of the Don Quixote family executives. Right as I'm writing the Don Quixote family, she says her name was Kuina. And I was like, oh my God, the One Piece fucking shit just keeps running.
Yeah. Okay. Zoro's Bay.
Yeah.
I didn't write down the specific rules, Paul. I know you're pretty good at this game because I know you figured it out before while you were watching it. So
yes, this
you
is
want to talk about any of the specifics.
I felt fucking invincible because I figured it out before everybody else did in the show. And I was like, you idiot. Don't
before
do
Anne?
That. Anne, I'm sure Anne fucking knew before the rules were done explaining. But basically there's one light bulb and it's behind a door, but you can freely open or close the door. You can only flip a switch once with the door open, otherwise you can flip the switch as many times with the door closed as you want, and you only get one guess as a group. Got to decide which switch turns on the light bulb,
and guess as a group is the important part that I'll bring up later.
And the timer was the water level that was slowly rising. They were like, watch out for the wires, and the girl goes, this wire and touches it.
Fodder number one. That just was the dumbest thing.
Like, Darwinism, dude. Straight up Darwinism.
Really, that's a selection.
That is legitimately what that is.
Also, wouldn't that have killed everybody else?
I thought the same thing.
I mean, that's just creating the connection.
It would have conducted it, right?
Yeah. I mean, if the water's gonna touch it and it's gonna kill everybody, why doesn't when this girl who's in the water and touching this, whatever?
Because the whole show would end, Paul.
Well, called.
Well, she didn't grab it. She just touched it. And it just blew her away. I don't know.
It would be called Usagi in Borderland.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Usagi and Borderline. Borderline.
But that would have been crazy twist.
If it just starts changing the name of the show mid-season. Yeah,
oh, if we lost fucking Karube and fucking Shota, whatever. Jesus, I guess that was, what, two episodes ago? And then we just lose obviously this episode.
Two episodes later.
Yeah,
I would stop. I probably would have stopped.
Yeah, I would say that would just be the terrible decision.
Obviously. Dude, so the water is going up, obviously, because they said that before the game even started. And fucking little bitch hat is going, the water level slowly rising. Like, no shit, dude.
He was the one that announced it originally, too. Yes. And now he's saying it again.
I was getting furious. And then he's like, we'll each take turns. I'll go in the door first. And you guys, were you fucking listening to the instructions at all? You moron. Like, come on.
He sucks.
Like, if I was a Risu, I would have been like, dude, just touch this right here. Yeah. And then that'll solve everything.
that it definitely would have worked too, even after the girl already hit herself.
Yeah,
like, okay, this one,
touch this. Yeah. He's like, and then we'll win.
Oh, that's, my god,
it's funny that you said that you figured it out, because I literally heard the rules and was like, I have no idea what's going on.
I was the same way too.
We'll just figure it out. Yeah. And I'll understand then.
I was trying really hard to figure it out, but I couldn't.
I felt like
I would have taken the, I mean, if I didn't figure it out, the 50, or I guess the 33% guess is what I would have taken.
66. Or I guess becomes 33, whatever. Because if you have three doors, right, know the answer of one, people are like, oh, that's a 50-50 shot, yeah. But it's not. It's a 66, but you already have the info.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Paul, lead us through the solution, man. Yeah, let us know.
21.
Okay, so when you turn on a light bulb, when they showed the light bulb, it was important that it was a candescent. And it wasn't a fluorescent.
Oh, you're getting me so horny.
Because the candescent ones create heat. So what Arisu did, flip the doors closed, flip the first switch, wait for a while, wait for that bad boy to heat up, close it, or I'm sorry, turn the switch off, open the door, flip the second switch. There you go. If the second switch turns it on the light, it's the second switch.
Yeah.
If the light bulb is hot, that means it was the first switch.
And if it's not,
it's the third switch.
He kept that a little too long. He had it. I was like, what the hell is this? Like, come on.
I was also curious. Do you think the executive knew the answer already at that point in time? Yeah, she was so
calm.
She
knew the methodology, not the answer of the switch. Because you couldn't.
Oh, right,
right.
She knew the method.
Which is awesome, because, you know, when Arisu figures it out, she does that sly little smirk.
Yeah.
Loved it, because she knows, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Arisu figures it out and the water's about to touch the electric circuit and he screams, the answer's A, she does it at the same time, because if she didn't do it, it wouldn't have counted because it needed to be a group answer. So I fucking love that. I think Anne was the MVP of the game. She's amazing.
Yeah, I was a little confused at first, because when I went into the game, I was assuming that if they turned the light bulb on at all, they would win.
Yeah, just like, switch all three.
I was just like, I was definitely lost in the sauce. I was like, I don't know what the fuck is. But I agree with you. Like, when he tells them to close the door, and then it goes to her, and she has a little smirk. I was like, this bitch.
even after the game has ended, how close that water is to those wires still would scare the shit out of me. Like, I'm not even
jumped. Literally a wave and a wave caused they're all dead.
No, that's actually a really good point.
I was like, that water was literally a centimeter like from the fucking wires.
And this is going to be a continual, I guess, physics discussion. And Paul, I kind of want your take on this. Like, would it have been that easy to open and close the door?
No.
Yeah, I was just thinking like, that whipping that thing open and close a little bit.
When that water level was like right at their chest, like all that water pressure pushing against the door, it would have been super hard to fucking drag that way. But it's funny you mentioned that, because I thought he was like trying to buy time. I thought he was like, oh, close the door to the light bulb, and that way we'll wait till the room floods open, and then we'll open the door and all the water will go rushing in. And
I had the same thought too.
I was like, what do you don't need to do that. What are you doing?
Yeah. I didn't realize that the water was, I guess, initially flowing in there. Because I guess if you, before the water started flowing and you had the door closed, you could use that room as a little bit of
Even imagine this, like where they were at by the end of it. Like if they close that door and that little bit of water just builds up real quick, even faster than if it was just open. Yeah. Like
that wave action would have killed them. Yeah. Also, I do want to say, because I mentioned this in the beginning too, I was surprised that Kuina was not like at all involved in like figuring it out. She kind of just did a lot of the bitch work. Thought she would be more involved in finding out the solution. So that's why.
See, I would have just been calm if Anne was there.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I'm just saying that I'm going to hold on to this idea that I think that she is smarter than she lets on, and that she is much more capable than she lets on.
We'll get a You'll get an answer.
Yeah. All right. So we got three more scenes here. They're all three just pretty packed. Mm-hmm. So let's jump right into the next one. And this is when everyone from the beach goes back to the beach. They start partying and celebrating, all the ones that lived, because a shitload of people died that night. And this seems to be a regular thing, just a weird lifestyle of the beach. Then we have an important conversation where Kuina walks over to Usagi and Arisu after they reconnect, making sure that they're both alive. I would have been freaking out a lot more, concerned, like, is Usagi still here? Is she good?
Yeah. When they locked eyes, I was like, bro.
She was looking around. Yeah. She was looking around all concerned. Like, is he here? Is he here? Also, the music, the song playing, was this the same song as the first episode when Chota, Karube, and Arisu are all texting each other, like meeting up?
Yeah, I knew it sounded familiar.
I was all bumping and everything.
It was in English, too.
It's so funny, too, because doesn't Akina or Agony come in and be like, turn off that fucking tacky music?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, come on, Agony. Why don't you let loose?
Yeah, but before we get there, obviously, we have when Kuina asks Arisu, is like, is this your girlfriend? And they're like, no. That's
freaks out.
Yeah. It was just like so, just like funny, like typical
anime girl, ship-lustered, red face.
It was really funny. And honestly,
this
also made me like Kuina more, because I'm like, if Kuina's going to be the person that like gets them over the edge to fucking make out and bang, she'll forever be my girl.
She can join, dude.
Kuina kind of talks a little bit about her backstory, not really, but just kind of about she mentions why she's always smoking that fake cig. Just remember that for later, and for non-spoiler reason. But
an audience question of like, what the fuck is she chewing on?
Yeah. I honestly thought it was like a Sanji lollipop, which the dub version used in the kid One Piece stuff.
I thought
it was like a lollipop or something. Like, I didn't know what it was.
She chews on. She definitely chews it.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a straw.
I agree. I at first I thought it was a pen because the sound it was making, but then I was like, why the fuck would she carry a pen? Yeah. And then I was like, it's a straw. But then I same thing. I was like, why the fuck does she have a straw?
So she quit smoking. Yeah.
Yeah. The reasoning's sweet too. She was like, I can't be short of breath, man. I gotta stop smoking. I gotta go back home.
She's smart.
That was a great reasoning too. She like quickly realized that in this world that she needed to adapt and smoking cigarettes. If anything, it's just going to kill her chance of surviving.
And she's fucking thinking, because the fucking guy who, I mean, yeah, he went out like a beast, killed a panther, but like that dude who was just walking around in those fucking sandals, bro. You need better footwear than that to play these games. Like, what are you doing?
But then we get this dope walk-up of the militants, right? Mm-hmm. Agony looking like a beast leading the other two. We have the samurai dude to his right, near Niragi to his left. And what a squad, man. They're just all weaponed up, just so intimidating. Agony, like Kyle said, was shut that fucking music down right now.
The mood just completely drops. And before they get over to the group of Arisu, Usagi, and Kuina, we do get some politics explained by Kuina, saying how the Hatter is one thing that controls the beach and the other half is the militants who control all the guns. She actually says all the weapons on the beach, but like the Hatter leads hand in hand with them. So then they roll up.
Yeah, I like this because the impression I got from the original when we first meet the Hatter in the boardroom or whatever you want to call it, it was just kind of,
I want to call it that now.
Yeah. From his perspective, everything sounds somewhat rosy of like, you know, we're all working together for this common goal to get one person out of here. Everyone piles their cards together. Obviously, it couldn't have been that simple. It's not like everyone's just like, yeah, fuck it. Like, run in, you know, take my fucking cards.
Right.
So I'm glad that they kind of quickly introduced that there is some type of internal power struggle going on.
Dude, Agony and his new scar that he got from playing tag. I love that so much.
Such a great addition to his character design.
So I have a question for you guys, because I might have taken this the wrong way, but I think I'm taking this the correct way, where when Agony rolls up and sees Arisu, he says, what happened to
your friend?
Yeah. I took that, even though like his next sentence is just saying that the weak die, essentially. Mm-mm.
It was the opposite.
He said, oh, so it looks like the small fish survived.
Oh, okay, Arisu. Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes me feel even better. So when he was asking about
Karube,
it was semi-respectful.
Oh, more than
so. No, yeah, because he really wanted him to be there. He would have been completely just joined.
I mean,
him
and they beat that dude up. They teamed up.
That was fucking sweet. I was like, you put respect on that boy's name who's in the grave right now.
Talking about the tag game, it makes a lot of sense now that with the start of the game, when White Hair is like, tells Agony and the other guy who ends up dying, like, this is a good spot. And then they turn away and he's like, oh, that was cold. But like, there's only people he really interacts with.
Yeah, he waves. He gives them a little
wave. To them. Yeah, you know? And it was like, is he like just a little motherfucker? Obviously, he's a little motherfucker. But like, that interaction makes a lot of sense now because they knew each other.
Yep, exactly.
There's no way to know that at the time.
Yes. But yeah. I noticed that in my rewatch. I was like, oh, because I would never have picked that up on the first time through.
Luke brought that up to me, I think, off pod, one of the episodes. And I was like, damn, that's good stuff. Weird.
He was just like, don't talk.
You think he's just being a little shithead, like, ah, hey, what's up, dude?
Yeah. But he also, he didn't do that to anyone else, you know, because if he was a motherfucker, he could have fucked with everyone.
And white hair, when Agni walks away and turns away, he goes, oh. Yeah. He was like a little sad. He was like,
come on. It's even funny, too, that they're both, they obviously have some type of, they both have some type of power and clout that they can throw around at the beach. So, like, the fact that he was fucking with them is funny.
Exactly.
Which begs the question, now that we know that they were both from the beach, why do they show up separately? That's fucking nitpicking. That's
well,
fine.
Clearly, I feel like kind of rolls to the beat of his own drum.
Yeah, they're solo fucking wolves.
No one gets in Agony's car except for the two.
Also, Kuina wasn't with him in the tag game, so I guess they're rarely.
Well, you don't get to pick what game you're assigned to, right? Because Usagi and Arisu are just split.
They got
up.
Split, yeah. So they could have been split as well.
How do you pick the game? Like, do they pick the games? That's the thing. It's like you don't know where they're going to show up. You don't know what the difficulty level is going to be.
So they do know where they're going to show up, but they don't know any of that other stuff.
Yeah, I would say the five that I got, it just seems random. Seems like you are assigned a team almost from the get go. I guess when you go there, and then like one game pops up in this area of the city, it's like, okay, that's team 10. Like, it's just kind of random.
That's how,
that's what, how I
do. And this brings about the biggest plot hole of the entire show, in my opinion, is why would there not be people at beach representatives at every single game we've ever seen from the first episode? If they have that many people all rolling out to the games where they know that where they are, there should have been beach representatives in the first two episodes.
I'm definitely in the Seven of Hearts game.
Yeah. Think. Well, I mean, they don't know.
I'm just saying that, like, that's a game that was popped up. Like, why wouldn't have someone?
Well, there's only like four phones there anyway.
And I'm also thinking, like, if everyone's doing different games and succeeding, like, then everyone's visas is going to be different too. Like, is it every night that everyone's doing this, you know, or is it like some people can take a break while the other people go out and do games, you know? Like,
If your visa's not expiring, I'm sure you don't have to go out.
Yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. So then,
that's a good point.
Also, maybe they don't know the exact locations of all the games. Some of them are like, the one was underground in a fucking like bus.
Yeah, okay.
They do say they have scouting, but I'm sure they don't find every game.
Yeah.
Because Tokyo's a big fucking...
That's what I was going to say. Tokyo is so big. When we first saw Usagi on the top of the building, you see all the lasers coming down. You have to think there's games happening everywhere.
That's a good point. You know, I mean, it's a city where fucking like what, almost like 12 million people,
I think it's like
in.
11 12
and, 10, and how many people are allied with the beach? It's not that many.
Yeah, it's
beach,
not a million.
And they did have to hike. They had to literally drive to get to the beach too, so
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
so a question that Paul asked at the end of last episode, which now becomes more relevant specifically to Kyle, is the ID of Arisu when he joins in, and you look at his phone every time, the number is 1,345,000 or something like that.
Is it the same?
Is it the same what?
Number every time?
His number, yeah.
Yeah, it's his ID. So now it's more reasonable to ask Kyle, because we had more knowledge about, do you think he was the millionth person, 345th person to ever be in the game? Or are we still talking like that's numbers way too big and it's just random?
It feels like that number is too big, but it also feels like just whatever it ends up being, 345 or whatever, is too small.
Where did they say... How far did they check how far the games extend to? Is it all of Japan, or did they say only Tokyo?
It's just Tokyo.
There's never been a game found outside of Tokyo.
So then what was the population again?
It's like 12 million people.
It's 12 million versus 1 million.
It's above 5 to 7 million for sure. So I believe there's 1 million people.
But it wouldn't be everyone, obviously.
Yeah, Tokyo population in 2015 is 9.27 million. Okay. So now it's 2020.
A tenth of the people in Tokyo disappeared and played
this
game.
That sounds way too high.
Yeah.
Unless whoever is controlling this game is like doing a Thanos thing where it's like mass genocide, like
maybe. But it's also people are not getting taken at the same time.
Yeah, it makes it more complicated.
It could be one, like maybe 1 in 10 people.
True, people, and this could have also been taken, there's not a million people alive. Maybe he's the millionth person to be in the game.
This game could
also possible.
This world could have been a thing for 50 years too.
Yeah, time doesn't work the same. All right. I just wanted to bring it up because there's no answers we're gonna be able to come to. It's just fun to think about.
I'm going to say we haven't seen anybody with an ID number that starts with like 09 something. It's always 1 million.
Could just be a placeholder. Like could some be. People do like some code keeping.
Yeah.
Does it? I don't know. Who knows?
All right. So back to Agni walking up to the three people here outside the pool. We have that awkward interaction where Agni requests Usagi to be brought to him. I don't know what the fuck he was going to do to her, but Arisu steps up, defends his girl, and then that whole Naragi Arisu conversation happens, that little mini interaction, and then Agni ends up saying, break his leg so he dies in the next game, which is just brutal.
Yeah, I was like, whoa. Did not seem that serious. But obviously, I mean, it's this is Agni kind of, you know, slapping his dick on the table in front of everybody at the beach, so he can't kind of tolerate the kind of disrespect. But kind of Arisu's reaction was like, obviously not going for it. And he might like, he either grabs, what is his name? I'm sorry, Naragi or something like that. Mm-hmm. But Naragi's response when he goes, oh, I thought that was so good. It was so well done.
Agni's like, literally, he's like trying to rape.
Yeah, that's what, is that what it was?
Yeah,
that's
like he's trying to rape her. I'm like, yo, I didn't catch that the first time. That's intense.
Yeah, you know? I couldn't tell if that was like just what Naragi said, because it seems like he's just kind of a douchebag.
Yeah.
Or like,
you mean Agni, you mean?
No, because Naragi says, you know what I mean, like our boss, or like wants the boss taste. Yeah, like wants a taste.
No, but that happens after he said, bring me the girl, like I want the girl. So he's definitely trying to
I think there's also a possibility that, you know, he was just maybe testing Arisu and see how he would react.
That's a good point.
I like maybe. That better.
Yeah, maybe. Plus the nuts on Arisu, man, for fucking, he literally just got told, don't get involved with the militants, whatever you do.
By Quina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And three different times he just jumps in front and was like, don't touch my girl. Okay.
Yeah. I think at some level, Agni has a little bit of respect for Arisu. And mm-hmm. he kind of just said, like, yo, your boy's dead. Like, the small fish survived. So he might be testing him, like, how he kind of is dealing with that.
That's my headcanon now.
That's how I took it, because I don't want Agni to be a raper.
But anyway, so this stuff starts to escalate. He says break his legs, and then the fucking Hatter shows up, and this scene is great because at this point there is absolutely, you can hear a pin drop behind as the two ones that lead the beach are just squaring up, and he walks right the fuck up to Agni and just asks him who the boss is. He said, who's the boss? And just looks him straight in the face, just unblinking, just close in on Hatter, just all serious. My God, that gave me chills. I loved it. Just how he like tilts his head back a little bit. Tell me what you were thinking, because I don't know.
I mean, he straight little boys him in front of everybody else. And then especially we talked about before we recorded, but then he tells him, hit the showers, bitch.
Like, I wrote that. He's like, tells him to go take a shower. At first I was like, is that a metaphor? Because he probably just smells like complete ass.
Yeah, I think it was both of like, yeah, he smells like dick. And also like just showing him that he can go tell him to do that. And he kind of,
true, he's like,
goes and gets a shower, like he totally kind of does it.
Because part of it is the fact that he knows at this point he has Anne's report on Arisu. He's not going to let Agni kill one of the potential executives. So he's out here saying, you're not touching the new recruits. Like, let them go.
Well, yeah. Especially because he values, I think he sees Arisu's value.
Yeah. 1,000%. Because what he says right away is he calls a meeting for all the executives, and then as he's walking away, he turns and just says, Arisu, you come too, which is just respect out the ass.
And then we get another double dose of respect, because Whitehair says to Kuina, basically, like, you know, what do you think? And she was like, I like him.
Yeah, she's like, vouching,
you
know, too.
I like you.
Yeah, like she's you, obviously, Kuina. Like, she likes them. She wants to help them, I think, and she respects Arisu, at least at this point.
Yeah, and she's so much better than Chibuki.
Yes, 1,000,000%.
So much better.
R.I.P.
Chibuki, obviously, you know, huge titties, but
true. I don't get. I don't get.
He was thinking about her titties.
He gets it now. He understands.
No, I don't get what her point was. It just to try to divide the group.
Thank you. I agree. I think, like, she was
what
a
the
terribly
fuck was she
character.
Point? Like, she got in there. She, good. Okay. Just so Chota didn't die a virgin. Is that the only purpose?
No. She was basically getting a security blanket. Like, if it comes down to one of us dying, like, you need to die. It's for the better of everybody. She was trying to, like, kind of basically get one of these disposable teammates, like fucking Abs was talking about.
Yeah,
is the way I took it.
Exactly. All right, so we get the executive meeting in the boardroom. That's our next scene if we're ready to move on, because a lot this is some info dump here as well. But two more scenes here, second to last. So one of the cool things you see as they pan into the boardroom is exactly what Kyle, you brought up earlier, how they're just counting every single card from all the games there, just because, you know, that's one of the rules of the beach. If you win a game, the cards belong to the beach. They're all just kind of sorting them out.
Okay, that's really funny that that you're saying that because I literally thought they were playing poker.
Oh my God.
It just kind of happened quickly. And I was like, oh, they're just, you know, playing poker.
But you do see that two of spades come out. You know what game that was? Human elevator. So are we still thinking that the ace would be like really a breeze walk?
Yeah. Dude, that was a two of spades. That would
no. That, that's two of spades. That was two of spades. Spades is physical,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Dude, that was a oh thick pipe. God. That was not
pull up bar.
Yeah, that was not like an easy thing to grab.
Yeah. So then we still thinking that the ace we could survive an ace 10 push-ups game. Well, kind I mean, of yeah. Thing.
No, because yeah. Four of whatever the one that they the first game that was hard. Do you think we're going to survive that? You think you guys would have
the first game
that?
In episode one?
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, we would have done that.
Fuck I mean, no! I'm running through that door. I'm getting a laser. Yeah,
we
would have
used you as some fodder. We probably could have thrown someone else.
Somebody would have died. People would have died, but we wouldn't. All survived.
Yeah, I would have got the card.
I'm not gonna lie, a complaint I have with the show is the scaling of the cards doesn't seem it seems a little
yeah,
subjective.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They said it was a difficulty level, and then it's like, well,
two of spades.
I just don't think it's worth thinking about, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, just don't think about it.
Obviously, the floor has to be high where it's like people can fucking die and people should die within it. But then it's kind of like how there's only so much more you can do between, you know, a death situation all the time.
I think, yeah. Do you think like maybe the higher the cards go, the less options you have of survival, maybe?
Possibly.
Maybe.
Like, so maybe even on paper, it would look easier, but sometimes as long as it still has less options for surviving, then it just,
I mean, well, yeah. I'm just throwing this out. Like no options. It was, you know,
yeah.
All you are hoping in when you get into a game, in my opinion, is just don't pull a heart.
What?
Yeah.
What I asked last episode got answered this episode. It got answered earlier when Arisu and Usagi just got to the beach. I was saying, like, after all these games, where's the card? They don't show anybody taking the card. When they showed up, Hatter took all their cards, and it had all the previous ones.
Yeah.
So even though they didn't show it, it was pissing me off. They did have it.
They were thinking of you.
I was on the lookout because of your comments. Yeah. All right. So we're in the boardroom and all the important people, the heads of the beach are here. Some of the faces we get are everyone that was in the interrogation room in the beginning of this episode. Of course, we're introduced to them as the executives. And then we also have the representation of the militants being Agni, bald head guys in the room. And then I always forget his name.
Naragi.
Naragi's there. And then also the one that you find out right at this moment is White Hair is also an executive. Yeah. And to me, I remember watching that for the first time. Being like, fuck yes.
So fitting.
Yeah. Right.
It makes sense.
Just of course.
That fucking wave is so funny.
Going
yes.
On
yeah. He waves. At
yeah. I literally laughed out loud. I was like, this fucking guy
going on the,
I was just like, oh, you're here.
Because Arisu hadn't come into contact with him since being at the beach.
Even saw him yet. That was the first time he saw him.
White Hair is the heartthrob of the show. Like if you go to the Alice in Borderland like Instagram,
I said that in the first episode.
Yeah, I'm just gonna reiterate it now. Yeah,
really?
Literally,
yeah.
Like everyone is just like, this guy's the man. Love him. Like total, like sexy, hot.
Girl
like
simp over him.
That's
man.
So weird.
I simp.
I think if you're gonna simp, Karube.
Yeah, that's
he's
my guy.
A simp, dude.
That's why we have Alice on the
simp,
pod,
dude. Usai, I simp over her all day. I mean, goddamn.
All right. So to the conversation that kicks off is. Everyone just gets into a little bit of a heated strategy debate where Anne and the number two nerd executive are just going back and forth, just talking about the idea that they need to get this last 10 of hearts, right? Is that the last card that they need?
Yeah, the 10 of hearts has not appeared.
So they say she brings up the idea, maybe a condition is needed. They like shut that down pretty quickly.
I like that though.
Of course.
I forget the exact, I think there's a word in front of condition that she mentioned, but it just reminded me of a video game. I like that they threw that.
It's they're asking the questions you would have to if you haven't seen this 10 of hearts after being here, say 10 years, whatever Hatter's been there for, you have no idea. Then whoever it is chimes in next and saying like, we have to go farther and explore more areas. Maybe it's not in Tokyo. Then someone else chimes in saying there's never been a game arena found outside of Tokyo. Another person chimes in, says, well, we haven't explored that much. So it's like all this good debate that you would have because you're not getting real answers. The game master isn't telling you what the fuck's going on here.
These are questions I've been asking myself the whole time. And that's why I was like, oh,
just
cool.
Good writing in my
opinion. It made it feel real. Like these are real people actually trying to survive this shit. Cause like I'm thinking to myself, how would we, us at this table right now, solve these problems?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Exactly. That's why I like what makes the show good.
That they address Hatter's visa. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting them to do it this quickly. That was a question I had when he gives the speech initially after everyone breaks out of the nightclub, because all the executives are on that balcony and they're kind of sending everyone else out. And I was, you know, had the thought of when do they go to game? What's their visa?
Exactly.
Deal? Then we see Anne in the game. Then we find out Nagini is an executive. We find out that Whitehair is an executive, but I was not expecting them to kind of tackle his visa this early. So I did enjoy that. I also thought it was interesting how when he says, I have to, you know, I have to renew my visa soon or something like that. And all of the militants look at each other.
Yeah, they may they make that obvious.
Yeah, very obvious. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, you know, that power struggle is there's no love between them.
Yeah, they've been trying to put out a hit on Hatter probably the whole time. Like,
for yeah, I would say. I mean, it seems like it. I got the impression basically that like they think that the only way to basically get him out of their way is for his visa to expire.
Mm-hmm. How about fucking Abs just throwing shit right at Irisu just for no reason? She was like, hearts let you toy with people's emotions. Like, you don't even need to use your brain. Like, fucking even this bitch Irisu did it. There's a way that you can win for sure. Bring fucking fodder with you. People that don't mind dying. And just kill him off.
She's like sinister, like she's laughing.
Yeah.
Demonically.
Just adding a little bit more to her character, but she's just that's who she is. And she was the reason she brought that up was saying that there was a guaranteed way to win all games.
Yeah.
If you do that.
She kinda has a point.
But it was weird because she said like heart specifically. And then, you know, they got into the conversation after that and said, well, like, problem is we don't know the games until after registration closes, so we can't send the Hatter in there with fucking fodder.
Yeah, true. And then I like how the glasses guy says, "Well, we can figure it out, you know, with probability theory." And he's like, "Fuck that shit! Yeah. I don't need that pretentious."
Yeah,
that
pretentious.
Yeah, I'm just fucking rolling in. I'm, says, my 100% clear record, baby.
Okay, I want to comment specifically on that because he does say, "Fuck it, I'm joining this game." Meeting adjourned. And then he says, like, I have 100% win rate.
Should obviously, be easy
everybody does.
Obviously, yeah. Everyone that's been in a game has 100% win rate. But off. This is what I was bringing up off pod before was I saw that some people were saying that it was a mistranslation, saying something about, like, it's supposed to imply the fact that
he has the most.
When he goes into games, he is the Arisu of the group where he pretty much is the one that figures it out. Like, there are people that survived the tag game that didn't really win it. So I think the translation issue comes there where every single game the Hatter goes into, he finds the answer, he wins it for the group, whatever.
He's
the ace. It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Which makes a lot more sense like because that. there's going to be casualty wins in every single game if there's enough people there and it's not a hearts game.
That's a good point.
That makes a lot of sense.
That adds another element to Hatter too that I didn't really get before.
That was something like that bothered me. The first time we watched it, we talked about that. I remember bringing that up.
Pissed me off.
So
I mean, that does make a ton of sense.
But yeah. It's not a mistranslation. It could just mean that he's like really arrogant and he's just like, yo, I have 100% rate because he thinks he's the man no matter what. So he's just saying.
I think like it makes more sense the other way. It's just like how when Anne was in that game, she would have been the one that won that game for them if Arisu wasn't there, you know?
Yeah, that's why I like the executives too. Because like I said, it's very obvious that it's an apparent meritocracy because there's no way you can kind of. I mean, you might be able to bribe your way to, like, I don't know, maybe to be like an executive's right hand man or something. But like to be an executive, it seems like the only way is to clear games.
Yes. So that he adjourns the meeting after saying, I'm going to just join whatever the next game is. Cool. And now we have this last scene here between Hatter giving the lowdown about tiny part of his backstory, not the full picture, to Arisu, building up some more credibility about what it was like in the normal world. I don't necessarily have a lot of notes for this scene.
I just wanted to flashback to the end of the last scene say that when he says he's going to join the next game, he says, executives, I'm counting on you to keep things in order here, basically. And it gives us another very obvious, you know, scene where it just flashes right to Agony.
Yeah.
Where he's sitting at the table with the gun on the table and it's just him in the scene. It's just like they're really selling that rivalry between the two of them. I also think that I don't know. I mean, I feel like not obviously it wouldn't be that easy, but I feel like if you joined a game with someone, it's not the hardest thing in the world to get someone killed in a game.
Mm-hmm. I think this final scene is just to basically just kind of sum up just the Hatter, just give a little more backstory. I don't really think there's much to dissect here besides just him with that. I love that boss ring when he's squeezing the chick's ass. Dude. Yeah. So fucking sweet, man. I
thought it was
the
funniest transition where it's just he's just making out with these chicks. Yeah. They're like thighs, all this shit. And then Arisu's just like sitting straight up, straight as a pencil on the couch, like not drinking anything, just watching it happen.
He's a neat. I had to look that up when he called him a neat.
What is a neat?
It's like no education, extracurriculars or something. It's an acronym for basically meaning you're a bum.
Okay. Well, our boy is not a fucking bum.
Japan is crazy. Like you can rent random stuff. One of them being like a neat. You could rent a neat to just hang around with. You can rent like a middle-aged man just to chill with you. It's so crazy.
That is definitely a cultural difference. I just thought it was interesting that he again says the original world. Mm-hmm. I think the use of the world, even if it might not be a direct translation to what, you know, was said in the manga and the source material, but I think the word original is just an interesting choice of words.
When he does talk about the original world, he paints the picture that he was just a very ambitious person, kind of connects with who he is now. He wants to be loved by everybody. He wants to be the hero. He wants to be the person that clears the game. Mm-hmm. He says for a hero to be made, tragedies are needed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And he names the place after his club.
Yeah, that's cool. I do like that.
He's trying to like recreate that persona. Actually, just continue the persona.
He's like, oh, you haven't heard of the beach? I've been advertising it all over Tokyo. Yeah, what? Yeah.
He was a little upset by it. He was a little salty.
It's like I played in speakers all over. He's like, oh, I sit in my house and play games.
It's also funny that the beach, like he was going to name it the beach, and the swimsuit rule happened because of that. Mm-hmm. Like if his club wasn't the beach, I doubt they would be wearing swimsuits.
Yeah.
The express reason.
They could have named
it
like
things.
Alaska and just everyone wear just fucking bundled up house and shit.
You could hide your guns. Dude.
I really like that rule. Honestly, I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And also it helps us with the hot chicks.
Yeah we like
and the
that.
Guys.
Speaking
guys,
of which, man, guys, dude, he's got guys. Two babes around his arms right at the beginning of the scene.
He's probably against their
I mean, the difference between him and Arisu is just so fucking obvious in the scene. It's like so crazy. But I feel like they're kind of also planting a seed of like Arisu is obviously going to be like who the Hatter thinks that he's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the
same. Arisu is going to be that guy. You know, he's going to be the hero. I'm assuming. But I also thought it was interesting that they flashed to his wristband or his key or whatever. And it says, I'm pretty sure it says 001.
Right.
The Hatter's number one. Yeah, he's number one.
I didn't realize that like that was...
By the ranking system.
Yeah, but yeah. I just think, I mean, it kind of lends itself a little bit to our conversation we had about like their ID numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, obviously they're not the same thing, but it would be interesting to see what his ID number is.
I'm wondering, how many wristbands have been given out.
Like if you can change ranks, you'd have to change
wristbands.
Shit on your wristband. That would be humiliating. Someone jumps you and you got to give them their wristband. It's like, fuck.
Like,
he does refer to himself as number one a couple times this episode, which is cool. But two other things to take away from the scene. The first is just Arisu still doesn't trust the beach and anything because that's shown by him not drinking the drink. He thinks it's poison or something, and Hatter's like, fuck you, bro, drinks it anyway. And then the second thing is after the conversation happens and it ends with him saying for a hero tragedies are needed, and it fades out of the beach, and it just highlights the fact that there really is nothing like this around in Tokyo when it just does the fade out like super far away.
Yeah.
So I don't know, not much to take away from that, but it's just kind of a cool shot.
Yeah, I like the shot. I think it looked great, but it also just took me back to the end of episode one where Usagi is on the mountainside looking at Tokyo.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like if you got high enough, you would just see the beach.
Yeah, but would you be like, oh, that's the beach?
No, I mean, you wouldn't say that's the beach. Maybe it would be like, what's with all that electricity?
Specific scenario, you're just like looking at nothing except the light.
Look at all that electricity. What's good with that? Literally amazing episode.
It was great, right? Like, this is the best episode.
By far the best episode. I think the great thing about the show is that, I mean, for me personally, it's just been all rise. Every episode is just kind of
glad
kind of
to
built,
hear it
like, get built bigger. Really well on the last episode. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And this episode kind of, like Luke had said a little bit in the beginning, kind of just busted open the floodgates on the world.
Now you have a roster of characters, not just four names that you know, right? And now, like, it's going to be more fun if characters die or if characters betray each other and you have a little bit of the politics dynamics going on the beach. Like, I just thought episode 5 was so good at laying a groundwork for the rest of the series.
Yeah, without a doubt. And they teased us so well in episode 2 with, like, you know, the beach crackling over the walkie-talkie, and we meet Agane and fucking Whitehair, and it's like, oh shit, like, look at these motherfuckers out there in the world. Like, who are these other diverse characters we're going to run into? And then they literally hit a home run in our face in fucking episode 5.
Two episodes of nothing to do with the big picture. Yeah. Character development for Arisu, now introduce him back into the big picture and let's fucking go.
Yeah. It was great.
I thought this episode, I want to make a parallel to Sword Art Online, as mentioned before when I listened. You learn in this episode a lot how some people, their motives, you know, they kind of like the game. They like being in the game. Like Niragi, he obviously enjoys it. You know, you can tell real quick. He's like
Hatter as well.
Hatter really enjoys it. Aguni, he wants power, but he likes where he's at. He likes position of power. He wants to grow that position of power. Kind of like when you had the red player back in the line. You know what I mean? It's like cool like that.
Yeah. And that's like a good point too, that I feel like a lot of people are probably living a better life in the game
now.
Compared
right,
to what their life was like in the original. Like, imagine like if Chota had made it to the beach when they were surrounded.
Yeah, he wouldn't want to leave.
His life would be much better than it was in the normal world or in the original world.
I think Arisu is even having that.
Yeah. Well, right, like now. Paul had mentioned, he now has like a drive in his life. You like know what I mean? Like, he has having like, I mean, granted, he's faced with a lot of life and death decisions and he's lost his friends. In general, like, his outlook on life has, I would say, probably changed for the positive in a way.
I think this episode shows really, like, it separates itself too from just being something we like because it's anime-ish. Like, it's actually a good show.
100%. Oh my
God, you know, this episode emphasizes that.
Yeah, the way they, or I mean, it was something that kind of I mentioned, I think, after our, you know, in the episode 1 and 2 podcast. There's obviously like people that know a lot about the world and that they are organized in an effort to figure this shit out. There was no way it was just a bunch of fucking, you know, individuals that were trying to figure the game out. So I literally couldn't be happier with the organization that is doing this spearheaded effort to beat the game.
Yeah,
it's
incredible. I'm
so I don't know if this is nitpicking or not, but it's just an observation. I'll say the lasers come down. They come down at like a 90-degree angle, like straight from above the person. So, I mean, that just makes you think a little bit. Okay, so where is the laser coming from? Is it coming from one satellite? Probably not, because it seems like there's many following other people. Or is it just a roof above them? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you right now, Kyle, we don't know the answer. We're all theorizing right now. And to go further into that, where exactly are they? I know we've theorized about this a lot. Are they in a simulation? So these lasers are just easy because you just fucking code it in there. Are they teleported forward in time? Okay, so this one I got to show my homework a little bit for. So the only reason I say forward in time is because the beginning of this episode, when Arisu and Usagi are hunting the boars, Arisu says like, oh, like you need to see the big picture. Like, I know that because I used to play Battleground or whatever. And Usagi's like, what?
Battlegrounds from Hearthstone?
So, yeah, something nice. Like that. And she's like, video games? And he's saying like games you play online. She didn't understand it. Now, that can be taken as, you know, she was fucking climbing mountains, not spending time inside. But then when you go to the end of the episode,
wow,
and
I never put this together,
and Hatter is saying like, oh, you never heard of my beach or whatever, like it was really popular. He says he was inside and only played video games, but at the same time, you've never heard of it. Like, you're outside every once in a while.
True. That's a really good point. Was saying that you used to be playing on the speakers on cars, and that nobody does. That happened in like the 80s, maybe in like the 90s.
I'm trying to think back to the Usagi flashbacks, but like, it wasn't TV that was showing the dad's disappearance. It was newspapers. So that could time up well. Too,
Wasn't there a computer though? I feel like I saw a computer.
I don't vividly remember.
I mean, I'll have to go back and check. And I'm sure there could be answers to these questions in some of the episodes.
So essentially you're theorizing or potentially putting it out there that these players in this dystopian world are plucked from different points in time but put into the same arenas.
Yeah, I'll go a little bit further. So I've been theorizing, trying to come up with why people are chosen, why they're there, if it's completely random or not. And the only thing I could come up with was in the first episode, Chota's mom is saying, oh, like Tokyo's poisoned, all this other stuff. Yeah. And it's like it's overpopulated and all this other thing. And the three of them, Chota, Karube, and Arisu, all were skipping work when they met up and then they got teleported.
Oh, so they're bums.
Yeah. Is it like the less society gets plucked out and removed to further, you know,
genocide,
humanity?
Well, see, I don't know about that because when they're talking about Agni, they say he was like a ex.
He could have been officer. Well, he could have been a shitty
corrupted
person.
Okay,
because to go with the big boobs, she was cheating. She was sleeping her way up the ladder, and that's she was literally.
Wasn't she in the act?
She in the shower exactly right after, like a bad thing. So,
okay, that's but what about Usagi though?
Yeah, that what about the old really lady from the tag game?
I mean, Usagi was. Okay, the old lady on tag game seemed like a bitch. That's she seemed true, like a lot of shit true. Going on.
She had a lot of time to be a bad person.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the person who was the mowed
down.
Yeah, yeah, the second
No, the old lady too. That was
mowed down
and gets shot.
Yeah, gets mowed.
I think for Usagi, she was depressed, laying on the floor of her bed. She was not doing anything. She wasn't contributing to society. This is all theories, but like
I like it.
Dude, no, I like it. I like it. It's good.
You are a tinfoil hat guy, and I love everything. 99% of your theories, I'm all for.
Yeah, Seapaw or civil engineers were smart.
I'll slap that with a vibe.
Yeah, that was
vibe.
A good one.
I vibe with that. Vibe. I vibe at very least with the time stuff.
Wow, dude, if that's right, people are gonna say call you out for reading the fucking manga.
Yeah, I swear I didn't.
So. I also like the arena idea because we did see in episode one how like the lasers really don't come from anywhere specifically. It's like. They do come from the same height, essentially. So it could be just like a clear arena dome that just is always prepared.
But they left Tokyo.
Yeah.
They can.
It's so hard, but I love that theory.
That up, yeah, I wanted to bring that up. I was like, you know, they're coming from the sky. They're shooting right down in their forehead every single time between the eyes. Like it could definitely be a big dome, you know, a big arena or something in only Tokyo. And it's like a little bit of the external vicinity, I guess. If they're able to like drive away.
Do you have another one? Are you good?
No, that was it. That was like all four of them mushed into one.
No, that's great. We loved it.
So before we get out of here, we're going to do a Binge Town special here. We have not been doing this for the first two podcasts. So we're going to bring it back for Alki's first appearance on the podcast. So Bang Kill Mary, everybody knows the rules. I'm going to put a little spin on this one here. And you have to answer this question as if you were just dropped into the game and you were put onto the beach, and you have to answer this question real world and real implications. Okay. So the three characters you have to choose between are Usagi, Kuina, and Anne. Who are you going to bang? Who are you going to kill? And who are you going to marry?
So I will go first, and I know we're talking real world consequences, but I'm going to throw caution to the wind, say, fuck it. I'm going to marry Kuina because I just like Kuina a lot. And then
Paul's going to throw some fisticuffs right now. He's holding it all.
It's tough. The nexus, who to bang is tough because I feel like banging Anne could be, that's like high risk, high reward. Cause like you bang her and it's like, then we become friends kind of maybe afterwards. And it's like, whatever, we're kind of cool and she's an executive. Or it's like we bang and she hates my guts and she's an executive and she wields all this power over me. So I'm not going to take that risk. So I'll kill Anne. And then I'll bang Usagi because she's nice, I guess.
Well, I'm going to go second, but that is some good answers there. I thought about taking that exact path, but I'm going to take the clout route. And I'm going to marry Anne for the sole reason that I want her to protect me in these games here. I'm following Anne until I die here. And then that leaves me to bang Kuina because Usagi's the new person. Killing Usagi, she has no pool here on the beach. Kuina's in there with white hair. Let's get it.
Yeah, I'm going to somewhat similar. I'm going to marry Anne because, Kyle, you had that. You had that 50-50. What if she likes me? What if she doesn't? She'll like me.
I agree. If you marry her, yeah. She'll
Will satisfy her until the cow come home.
I know you will.
So I'm going to marry Anne and make sure that she protects the shit out of me in all the games. And I'm following her everywhere. I'm going to marry Usagi.
Now you're
going to
marry two people now?
Oh, my God. I'm going to marry all of them. I'm going to bang Usagi because
She
keeps it toys.
For a second, I thought I was the only one who thought Usagi's hot.
Nah, I like Usagi.
I love that reason.
I said it last episode. We haven't put it out at this point yet, but I just stopped everyone. I was like, Usagi's hot, right?
She's hot, dude.
And Kuina gets the axe because hasn't done anything for me yet.
Yeah. How dare you?
We're going to have, I think we're at different answers at this point in time because I am going to marry Usagi.
Wow,
because she's hot and she obviously can, you know, she's good at games too. I mean, just because Anne's smart, but Usagi's got some physical abilities that could help us out.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll do that. And so I definitely think
you're
she
the
can climb this mountain.
Scenario.
Oh, 100%. Look at my fucking head. It's huge. It's all brain in there, baby. Anyway, that leaves me to banging Anne because she's definitely way crazier in bed than Kuina. So kill Kuina.
Have you seen Kuina's hair?
Kuina's got dreads.
Kuina's done
dude.
Nothing. And also, for I'm also going to say that
she's
we've already
smoker.
Talked about
you're
how
a smoker.
I'm not anymore.
Same.
She isn't either.
fucker. Sucks. She's getting the axe. But we already said it today. Like, she didn't do anything in that game, nor have we seen her do anything in games. So I have no problem just throwing her to the winds.
That's fair.
We are on episode 5. I think my answers would change by episode 8, but at this point in time, Kuina gets the axe, and I bang.
My answer was completely tailored around the knowledge we have up until episode 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, new guy.
Last but not least, huh?
Last is interesting because you hear everyone else go. And
well, it changes your opinion as you, yeah.
My opinion's not really been changed. It's just really hard because you guys know me, and like, if I'm thinking about real world implications, I'm banging all three, whatever. But, like,
are you saying that that's what would happen in the real world?
Because I'll try.
I love that.
Yo, but like, all right, here's my dilemma, right? And I feel like I have to marry her because she's the highest of all those three.
Clout.
She'll protect me, you know? Usagi's bad as shit. But what, she has no beach clout, like Luke said. Mm-hmm. But she's, you know, she's good survival. She can obviously hold her own in the games. Like me and her, we could probably, you know, if I bang her, like I'm the side bitch, it's fine. She's the side bitch. She'll be on me. You know what I mean? But the thing is,
honestly, I have no idea what you mean.
Like, she'll have my back because she'll be in love with me. But okay, I'm married to Anne.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm married to Anne. So, have,
like, oh, so this is totally like, this is very realistic for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is all good though.
Yeah. This happens all the time. Anyway. But then Kuina, like, I'm hesitant to kill her because of White Hair's implications. Like, he's going to come after me if I kill her because he's going to come
That's
after
a good
me.
Point.
You know what I mean? So I think I have to bang her and kill Usagi, which pains me so hard.
Ah, we're
gonna,
in the same boat.
You don't think he's gonna,
that's why I'm pissed Luke said my answer. But, like,
you don't think he'd kill you for banging his girl either?
Arisu?
I think he doesn't care. No, he's asexual or something. He doesn't care.
Alkisu. We're talking about Alkisu, then yeah.
Bro, that's Alki-kun.
Alki-kun.
Alki-chan.
Alki-san. Repeat your answer again for me one more time.
Marry Anne, bang Kuina, and kill Usagi.
So we only have one similar.
Yeah, me and Al have the same answer.
I honestly thought that
those are fun.
I thought every answer was going to be marrying Anne, bang Usagi, killing Kuina. That's why I thought you guys were all going to go.
Nah, dude.
I'm upset. I really don't want to kill Usagi, but if we're thinking about just right now, this episode. And yeah, I guess
I'm biased. What I know about Queen, I love Queen. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know much, but I love her. So
we'll get there.
That's why. I mean, for me, it was I couldn't bang Anne and keep her alive. I couldn't take that risk of her going crazy.
No, that was well thought out. Yeah. Not you can't bang Anne. She's a killer Mary.
Yeah, yeah, she's definitely was in a killer Mary tier.
Yeah, but you can't kill. Well, the thing is like, who's really got Anne's back? Like, we don't really know yet who's got Anne's back. She's kind of just like,
I got her back.
Really smart. Yeah. In front. You blow her back?
Hey. I'll throw her back
I'll
out.
I'll kill you both.
Just said that.
All right, we're getting out of hand here, Dave. Take us home.
All right, we're going to take it home here. So that was Alice in Borderland, episode 5. Great stuff. I'm just. I was not ready for it. All right, all right.
Let me just wrap that. Hey, first, thank you guys for having me. I had a great time. This was really fun. Hopefully, I've earned my spot for the rest of Alice in Borderland. If I haven't, I'll be pissed off. And it was Kathleen's birthday recently. Happy birthday, Kathleen. I know she's an esteemed member of the crew. Yeah, it was a pleasure, guys.
Look at him brown nose and collecting brownie points.
Bro, and that's all I do. I'm a politician.
I respect it.
All right, that's going to be it for this episode of Alice in Borderland. That was episode 5. By the way, our next episode coverage will be episodes 6 and 7. We're going to go back to that route. Like I said in the intro, we just thought there was a lot to unpack in this episode. So next two episodes will be 6 and 7, and then we'll do a standalone episode of episode 8 for the finale, just so we can get everything off our chest and let it all out. Be sure to check out our coverage of Shadow and Bone. Make sure you give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter, Instagram, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and the Spotify app. Check out our website, bingetowntv.com. We do have our merch line. I believe it is up on the website, so definitely go check that out. Once again, this is Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
We love you guys.
Take us home, Dave.
Uru-san, Uragiri mono no shio.
You could do it better than that.
All right, I was doing it better in the beginning, but now that I'm fucking... All right.
I think you messed up the syllables.
Do it fast.
Uru-san, Uragiri mono no shio.
Can I try doing it? I just want to hear myself do it.
Put that in.
Uru-san, Uragiri mono no shio. No, it was better than mine, honestly. Put it in.
Arigato gozaimasu.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.